Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by the Brain Injury Law Group, Attorney Gordon Johnson, www.tbilaw.com, 800-992-9447. To get automatic updates, tune in tbisn.org. When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at tbilaw.com. 800-992-9447.
Welcome to another edition of Brain Injury Radio Network. Hi there. This is your friendly hostess tonight, Kim Justice. I'm your regular Wednesday night host, but I'm doing a little pinch hitting tonight. It appears that our Saturday staff is having a little bit of a vacation, and well-deserved at that. So tonight, it was kind of funny. I thought that goulash meant a little of this, little of that. Craig was talking to me about getting some creative titles. And so last night, kind of late at night, I thought, well, let's see, what could be a topic for the Saturday night show? And then I thought, goulash, a little of this, a little of that. And so that's what I wound up putting down, but I didn't know that I was actually going to be doing a show. I thought that we had a tape in tonight, or that Penny and Kathy were going to be here, but they managed to catch me at my joke, and so the joke's on me, and I'm going to be your hostess tonight. So in the vein of a little of this and a little of that, I'd like to invite you to call in to 424-243-9540. Pardon me, I got a frog here. We're going to have a little bit of a open mic night tonight. Talk about what's on your mind in regard to your brain injury, and or talk about subjects and things that you'd like to hear about discussed on Brain Injury Radio. And then I'm going to be playing you some music, and I have an interesting, we've played music and we've talked about this other topic in separate shows, but I don't think we've ever put them together before. And so I do have a really good article that I read recently on, it's called Searching for the Mind with John Leaf, MD. He's the one who wrote it. That's L-I-E-F-F. And the article is called Music Training and Neuroplasticity. So I thought, well, what a great article to have on a night that we were going to be playing music. Derek, hello. Derek, I see you out yonder. I'm so glad that you're out there. Thank you. This is not one of our regular Saturday night shows, and hi, I'm seeing him in the chat room. Why don't some of the rest of you out there come and join Derek in the chat room and keep him company? Derek, this show is on Saturday night has been a lot of different things than the normal hosts are vacationing, and so I'm just kind of sitting in tonight and didn't really have a show planned. We've been flying, let me just put it that way. A lot of things went on this week. My parents' 55th wedding anniversary. Let's see, what was yesterday? Grandparents' day at preschool. And tomorrow is our second little granddaughter's 7th birthday. So between the shopping and the making it to all of these events, I'm kind of run ragged and didn't realize that I was going to be doing this show when I poked some fun, making that poetic program note last night. But in any case, I think Saturday night, good night to listen to some music, do some stuff, and use this in the background, or certainly please feel free to call in 424-243-9540. That way I won't get too bored, although I do like all these songs, and Derek, hopefully you will too. I thought I would get take care of a little housekeeping first. And the first item is that Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week with 10 different hosts. And right after the live program, they go into the archive for on-demand listening at your leisure, at your pleasure. So all of these shows are recorded, and if you miss part of it, yes, you may come back, Derek. Please do. Reading in the chat room. So in any case, they are available. If you can't make it to one of the live shows or you come in late and it's a topic that you're very interested in, then go find it in the archive. These shows, the original block of shows here for the last year, have been on from 7 o'clock Pacific to 10 p.m. Pacific time. We've added a new tier on the front end that would be 5 to 7 Pacific. Still looking to fill a couple slots, but we've got some really great hosts now down in that platform too. So Brain Injury Radio is growing all the time. And for that, we're very pleased for your support in listening and calling and sending the emails and keeping in touch like so many of you do out there in radio listener land. We do circulate to all over the United States in 36 different countries. And so we think that this goes a long way towards filling the peer-to-peer gap that there appears to be out there. Some people have some great support groups in their area. Others live in rural areas or in metro areas like mine, where there's about a million people, but there's just really no support group. And as many of you know, I went 17 years without ever meeting another brain injury survivor. In 1995, they didn't have computers on every desk. The doctor said I was fixed. I knew that my brain wasn't working quite right, but it was a visiting doctor. He left, and I just kind of bumbled through my recovery in isolation and on my own. I didn't know much of anything. In fact, the year that I've been here, I've learned more than in the 17 years before that, both from our other hosts and all of the guests. So, in any case, Brain Injury Radio now on about 5 hours on most, eventually every night will be on for 5 hours when we cover a couple of other slots. And so hopefully between that and the archive, nobody out there with a brain injury will ever have to go through it alone. It is a choice if you choose to isolate and find yourself in a stuck position and choose to stay there instead of taking some positive action to move forward, you know, that's your option. What was I going to say? Something about misery is optional. Anyway, you certainly have a choice. So also I'll mention the peer, the number 4, Peer, P-E-E-R, 1-1. I'll go ahead and type that in the chat room, I think. Yep, 4, P-E-E-R, 1-1, .org. And that will give you information on several things. One of them is that we're aspiring to have a 24/7 peer-to-peer support line, kind of like a hotline where you can call in as a survivor and talk to another survivor. I think they're up to about 8 or 10 hours a day, and we're looking for volunteers. So if you're looking for a way to pay it forward, to give back some of what has been given to you in your recovery and help other survivors, 4 hours a month, you know, most of us can squeeze that in. And I've got to tell you, if it's like, you know, being a radio host or running some unrelated groups that I run that have to do with offering service to other people, that it's really a way to build your confidence and self-esteem and make you feel good about yourself for helping someone else. So be sure to check it out, 4Peer11. either for the information about how to call the line if you need it, or for the information on how to sign up to be a volunteer. And we would love to have you do that, because the sooner we can get it going 24/7, the more apt that it's going to be that no survivor will ever have to call and find that the phone's not getting answered. Also, information on that site about the medical ID card, and that's a really good thing to have. So I'm going to leave you with that and let you check out that site. I wanted to talk to you about my regular Wednesday show coming up. Tonight's a Saturday, so I feel more like keeping it light and partying tonight. But I was very moved, injured, like a lot of the rest of the nation, when 9/11 happened in 2001. And I happened to notice a couple of weeks ago that 9/11 fell on Wednesday, which is the regular night of my show. And I wanted to do something special for that night in kind of a tribute to the survivors of 9/11. A lot of us who listen to this program, we may not have directly been in one of the 9/11 points of contact, but I think we were all affected. I know the day that that happened, a friend called me just before the second plane was going to hit the tower, and I witnessed that. I plopped down in a big chair. I had been getting ready for work at the time. I fell back in a chair in amazement, and I don't think I left that chair for 3 days. That's one time when maybe it's not so good to have 24/7 news on when something so horrific is happening that you're so totally powerless over. It's something that really shakes you up. And a lot of us on Brain Injury Radio know what that feels like in our own stories and our families, of the powerlessness that went on when it came to our personal crisis. So even though these two guests I'm going to have are not brain injury survivors, they're survivors of the most horrific event, I think, that we've had in this country. Of course, Pearl Harbor was bad, but it was, you know, it was in Hawaii. It wasn't in the heart of our country where the Statue of Liberty stands and our economic center, New York City. And I think that was really a strong impactor. And so the two guests that I was blessed enough to get, and I'm going to send out a reminder to them. I'm sure they're not going to forget, considering, but it's been a couple weeks since I talked to them. But it's going to be two guests. And we will be taking your calls in between, but they're going to share with us what went on with them that day. And the first guest is going to be Anthea Appeal. And she had been a police officer in New York City, I believe, for about 17 years. And she was one of the first responders when 9/11 happened. So she was right there, front and center. She got through that experience. She was a hero. She is a hero. She rescued people, and she also witnessed the horror of what was happening in the people. Excuse me, I'm going to have to get a drink too, Derek, out in the chat room. And the people who weren't survivors of that event. And Anthea has written a book. It's called The First Responders: The Untold Story of the New York City Police Department in September 11th, 2001. Right now, that book is only available as Kindle. It's in the process of visiting a new publishing house where it will be released again as a hardcover book. But before, or particularly after, we talk to Anthea, you may be interested. A lot of people are using the Kindle as a means of reading anyway, and so you can find that on the Amazon site. She will be in the first part of our show. The second part of our show is going to be Staff Sergeant Tim Chambers. And what he is mostly known for, certainly gotten a lot of press for is the Rolling Thunder event. And back in the middle 80s in the Vietnam, around the Vietnam era, there were a lot of Vietnam veterans who were very disturbed, as were many in the country, about all of the unaccounted for POWs and MIAs. And they decided to have a motorcycle rally event where they would ride to the Washington Monument. And the first year in the mid-80s that they did that, there were 2,500 that showed up. So quite a showing for the first time. And this has been going on every year since. They vowed until all of those POWs and MIAs were accounted for that they were going to keep doing this event, which they have. A few years ago, they added the wall with the Vietnam Memorial Wall, and now they go both to, they do a wall ride and the ride to the monument. And last year, it was estimated that there were about 900,000 people that attended that ride. So that's certainly been something that's gotten people's attention. But a number of years ago, a young Marine, pardon me, my throat, just one moment. Okay, a young Marine, Tim Chambers, was so moved by the events he saw, he also had a family member who was in the Vietnam War, that he dressed up in his Marine blues and stood in the middle of the crowd, and when the first motorcycle came over, he whipped into a salute. And he held that salute until the last bike crossed the line, which was 3.5 hours. 3.5 hours, this young Marine held his salute in perfect form without moving. An incredible tribute, service, and an anomaly, frankly, because I've talked to a lot of Marines since then that said they couldn't hold a perfect salute for 20 minutes, let alone 3.5 hours. I see a few of you in the chat room have heard of this. In any case, last year, when and Tim's been doing this for several years now, last year he happened to have a broken wrist, and it was beating down sun, and of course his full uniform, he had to be extremely hot on an extremely hot and sunny day, so he's sweating, ready to faint, in a lot of pain because he had a broken wrist. And he still held that salute the whole time. And you'll be able to see, I posted a couple weeks ago a YouTube video on Brain Injury Radio's Facebook page and on my In a Flash Facebook page, but I'll be doing that again this week if you missed it last time. It's really just a sight to see. It's incredible. But at the time of 9/11, Tim was stationed in Washington, and he was one of the first responders at the Pentagon. And so I'm sorry that we have to have these guests, but I'm very honored to have these guests, both first responders, one from New York and one for the Pentagon. And that'll be this Wednesday night on 9/11 at this same time and this same number, 424-243-9540. And I think what I'm going to do for them now, while I can get this throat cleared out, and then I'm going to start talking to you a little bit about music and brain plasticity, I'm going to play a song, and I think it was about 3 Saturdays ago, we had a show where we did play music. It was supposed to be a 3-hour show. It wound up being a 4-hour show because the actual artists were kind enough to show up for me on that night. I think we had 12 or 13 of these artists actually pop in, and I would tell them what song I was going to play of theirs, and they would give us a little bit of backstory on it. So not only was it special that they've given me written permission to play their music on Brain Injury Radio and to share it with the audience, but that they were actually willing to come here to spend time with us, and we're all very proud to do it. So one of the people that came was Chris Dukes, and I've also got a great video that I'll also post in those same two places. I'll post the one of Staff Sergeant Tim Chambers and the Rolling Thunder. I'll also post the link to Chris Dukes' Heroes video. But I think while we're talking about this topic is a good time to give myself 4 minutes and 10 seconds to see if I can get this sudden frog out of my throat and to maybe reflect a little bit about the heroes in your life, and we can talk about that. So I'm going to play this song, 4 minutes and 10 seconds. It's by Chris Dukes called Heroes. And I will be giving you the information on how to find him and it. Derek, this is Kim Justice. I'm the regular Wednesday host, and I'm sitting in tonight while one of the other hosts is on vacation. So I had the question there, who is the host, in the chat box, so maybe I forgot to tell you guys earlier that this is Kim. I'm your regular Wednesday night host. You're not usually going to find me here on Saturday, but here I am tonight. And here's Chris Dukes with Heroes, and then we're going to come back and talk about music and neuroplasticity of the brain. We'll read some, talk some if you want to call in, and play music in between. So we'll be back in 4 minutes.
Matter how far away you go, this will be yours.
caught me taking a drink. Derek, can you hear me? Okay, I'm just going to guess that you can. This is one of those nights I always forget when I... Oh, good. Thank you so much, Derek. God bless you. Some of you who have been around here a while know that there's a couple of things that I do fairly consistently, and one of them is I forget when I mute my mic. When I'm going to cough or make noise or go to the refrigerator to get something to drink, I'll mute my own mic, and then I forget whether I unmuted it or not. And I'm sure there's a couple of you chuckling out there because I've done it time and time again, but bless Derek's heart for being in the chat room. I did put, if you happen to be on Facebook out there, facebook.com/ChrisDukes, that's DukesBand, Chris Dukes Band. And if you liked his song Heroes, and some of them we play later, musicians aren't, there's a reason they call musicians and authors and painters who aren't blue bloods or very well connected starving artists, because most of us are. So at the very least, you might want to click on that link and just tell Chris Dukes thanks so much for letting Kim play his music on Brain Injury Radio. He also has a website, chrisdukesband.com, but we appreciate that. And of course, I will be playing it next week when Tim and Anthea are on the show Wednesday night. So we'll see if I can get through some of this without that frog, but I read this article, Music Training and Neuroplasticity. With our multisensory brain, music harnesses powers of nature, culture, and mind. How much is the brain changed by the effects of music training and neuroplasticity? Music is one of the most demanding cognitive and neural challenges, requiring very accurate timing of multiple actions, precise interval control of pitch, not involved in language, and multiple different ways of producing sound. Auditory and motor actions influence each other in a constant interplay, which is largely unknown. This section says, brain lesion effects on music. All brain imaging is done in a time scale of seconds, but the brain fluctuation in the scale of milliseconds. Imaging studies do not really correlate exactly to mental states, and it refers you to a picture, so I'll type this in. Because of this limitation, a major way to study specific regions of the brain related to music has been a study of brain lesions. A lesion in the auditory cortex causes amusia, where a patient can speak and understand everyday sounds, but cannot notice wrong notes in tunes or remember melodies. Another case, a 71-year-old cellist, had encephalitis and lost ordinary memory, but remembers music. Patients with a lesion in the right temporal can lose pitch perception. Damage to the right temporal lobe can distort sound to have negative response to music. Patients with lesions in the right temporal can lose pitch perception. What is known about music in the brain? Perhaps some generalizations can be made. Timing. Some think timing is organized in the cerebellum, which is the center of the motor memory and learning. Purely auditory perception has been observed in the cerebellum, but a single region does not control it. Pitch. Different factors of a tune, contour, specific interval size, duration of notes, ratio of tones, are preceded in different circuits throughout the brain. The right hemisphere does tonal processing. Musical imagery is analyzed in regions of the frontal lobe. Singing. Where is Les Paul when we need him? Singing is dominant in right temporal lobe, while syntax of speech and music is left dominant. The motor processes involve premotor cortex, supplementary motor cortex, cerebellum, and the basal ganglia, but in different amounts for different tasks. Rhythm, melody, and emotion work in different parts of the brain. There are multiple different streams of neuronal activity for auditory processing pathways. The dorsal and the ventral streams are important, but especially dorsal, with parietal and premotor cortex. All neural systems, motor, sensory, emotional, and analysis, are active in both performers and observers. Listening, as well as performing, use both motor and sensory systems, since observers trigger the muscles that are being utilized by the performers and dancers they are watching. Recent studies show that learning absolute pitch, a very measurable skill, occurs only with genetic ability plus training before 12 to 15. So, I'm going to let you think about that for a moment. Les Paul talks a lot about the American Music Academy. And I don't know what the website to that is, but they also, I'm going to be going on with this article. We'll play a couple songs and certainly call in 424-243-9540. And, he might have showed up after all. He knows. Here's somebody who knows a lot about music. A couple of them do. Our founder, Craig Cecilia, certainly does. And how could someone with a name like Les Paul Morgan not know something about music? How you doing tonight, Les Paul?
I'll say it like this. I'll take a stand. I'll raise my hand. I'll play some music and be part of the band. And it's the AMTA, the American Music Therapy Association. Just thought I'd make up a song right there.
I like that. That's what I did to get myself in trouble, though. I made up a poem on these program notes. Tell me again, I'm going to put this in the chat room. AMTA,
American Music Therapy Association. They're awesome.
Great.
I mean, awesome.
You sound like you have a little of something I need. Okay. Therapy Association. Now, you were saying that you came out of your coma by hearing yesterday, and I was wondering, is that he was going through talking about the brain lesion effects on music. Let's see, where was this one that must have been you? Well, you lost your pitch for a little while, didn't you? It took a little while to get it back.
My pitch was in a trash can.
That's what I thought. Now, this one said, this was the one, another case, the 71-year-old cellist had encephalitis and lost ordinary memory but remembers music. So apparently, depending on what side of your brain you have an injury in, it's going to affect those things I read about, which were timing, pitch, singing, musical imagery, rhythm, melody, and emotion. So tell me when you first, and we got another caller, good, but when you, for the people that don't know Les's story, he was in a coma for a very long time. He's our smorgasbord. Not only do I call him our southern gentleman, but I call him our smorgasbord of brain mishaps, if you will. He's had a AVM, aneurysm, he's had just about everything a brain can have, but his mama was a professional musician, a professional singer who traveled all over the country. And so tell them a little bit about how you came out of a coma and then what helped you to to bring your speech back, because after you came out of a coma and you came home, I know that you were depressed, but was your speech function screwed up then too?
I was told I was nearly mute. I would mumble and make nonsense talk that made no sense, baby talk. I was clueless to my surroundings. I was totally lost to the world. That the doctors were thinking I was a total loss. They were saying that, Mr. Morgan, your son needs to be put in some type of high care nursing home, because he's too much for you to ever take care of when he comes home after being in hospital for 3 to 3.5 months.
Right.
And I don't remember ever coming home. I don't remember the remaining months after that, after I came home. But I did come out of the coma to the Beatles song Yesterday, which is a very sad song. I actually had a man do a newspaper article on my story, and he said, it's very odd that you came out of a song that is so sad. Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. And it's almost like it's a song about someone dying. But I love
it. Well,
Paul
it was
McCartney
pretty apropos, though, when you think about it, considering you weren't in a very good place at the time. Yesterday, your troubles were far away. Today, you're in a coma, right?
Yeah. And my mother, she would not take no for an answer. They said speech therapy wasn't even good for me. They tried it, and I didn't know what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
They said I was completely a loss to any thoughts. I could not function. I would recognize things my mother would tell me. My brother Phil would say, Les, you don't even know who I am. My brother Steve said, oh, my goodness, he doesn't even recognize me as if he's never seen me before when we grew up together. My brother Phil and I shared bunk beds as kids. I couldn't remember any of that. And my mother appeared to be a total stranger to me. My mother said, oh, my God, I've lost my son. What can I do to get him back? And I said, there is nothing. He needs to be in a high-up nursing home or some kind of facility. My mother says, no, I refuse that. He's not going in there. He's 22 years old. And when she bought a karaoke machine after hearing an advertisement on one for Home Shopping or QVC. I always forget which station it was, but it was one of those two channels. And she saw how people were learning how to sing, watching the words, and she knew how I loved the Beatles and all kinds of the Bee Gees and all kinds of different bands, anything from Grand Funk Railroad to everything else. And she bought it for me, and I was so depressed, I would get into bed and literally cover my head up with a blanket. My mother would beg me to get out of bed, and I hardly knew who I was, and she'd say, I don't want to live. She said I was so depressed. And so she put the karaoke machine beside my bed, and she said, you don't know it, boy, but you're going to play this thing, and you're going to like it. You watch. I got the Beatles in there. I got Paul McCartney
Uh-oh.
In there. I love Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
And so he starts playing it and walks out of the room. One of my first memories is playing around with the microphone, and she starts crying outside the door hearing me trying to sing, and I hit every note wrong possible. As bad as it sounded like disgusting to hear me try to sing. And she was trying to make me sing. She came in the room, and I'm there, tears running down my eyes, just saying, I can't do it. And she says, listen at you, you're making noise, go. And she had me sing Band on the Run and Yesterday, Maybe I'm Amazed, and Long and Winding Road, songs like that that I still sing today because of that. My mother was my music therapist, even though she was not a trained music therapist.
Wow.
She did things that they said were impossible.
So, oh, okay. So but after you were, how long do you think you were, or did you say, and I missed it, I'm sorry, something shiny got me again, and I caught something out of the corner of my eye. That's the other thing that happens to me besides forgetting to unmute my mic is I'll lose my train. But you, when you first started, like you said, your mom heard and you sounded real froggy, but you continued, and how
froggy.
Long would you, I'm sorry?
It was worse than froggy. The pitch was terrible. My vocal cords would seem to sling notes high, low, everything wrong. if I try to sing a song that I knew, I'd sing it in every wrong key you could possibly sing. Where I mean, it'd make people
okay.
I want to beat me up if they heard me sing. It was terrible. But within a few hours, just a few hours, I was
That's
able to sing songs like
to
Yellow
know.
Submarine.
Wow. It was like hours, not days and weeks or years.
Well, over the next few weeks, she would make me practice on that karaoke machine, and I started liking it because I couldn't hardly get out of bed. I crawled out of bed, and it was very hard for me to do it. And the next thing I know, I find myself singing every day. Since my mother was a singing teacher, she taught music. And another thing I've never mentioned is she did music for Sunday schools and things like that, and she'd have large Sunday schools where she'd teach all the kids how to sing. And so she treated me like a kid learning from new. And so it started out like that.
Wow.
And I tell you what, she was not a music therapist at all. They use all kinds of different tools, and they use all kinds of different instruments, including the metronome for metronome therapy. And it was just within weeks, I was doing things the doctor said were impossible. I was out walking in my yard and everything. I didn't even recognize my own car parked in the yard. My mom said, "Do you know what that is?" And I said, "Is that Dad's car?" Because I, for some reason, I could remember my dad. And I'm standing there saying, "No, I don't know whose car that is." My brother Phil says, "That's your car." Really? I don't remember that car. I didn't remember his car. And it was a long recovery, but my mother helped speed it up like lightning.
Well, it sounds like it.
It's absolutely amazing what she did. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, nothing. I was just going to say that resonated because a lot of that music, if you were, you know, like me, and it sounds like we were when we were real young, you know, we were singing songs, you know, you'd find your old favorite songs, whatever style it was, and sing them over and over and over. I think I had my mic muted when you said Grand Funk. Those were my first few concerts were to Grand Funk, and it was before they went poppy with Locomotion. But I was a Chiquita in Omaha, and I must admit that I was there during the real time with the real band, not the home show version now, but, you know, the real guys back in the Mark, Don, and Mel days. And I think I saw them twice. Those were the first two concerts I saw was Grand Funk and Grand Funk. I was really into them back then. I liked Heartbreaker and I'm Your Captain and Mean Mistreater. I mean, really.
Do you remember the television show? I was just going to say, do you remember the show called The Midnight Special where different bands would come on every weekend and be at like 11 or 12 o'clock at night? I grew up watching that. And so all
it's
those bands from that time.
It's special.
Yep. And so my mother went.
I haven't thought of that for years. I was thinking you were going to say Soul Train, but when you said Midnight Special,
that's
I remember.
Thing.
Yeah, both of them.
Midnight Special and Soul Train were two of my favorites.
Me too.
Soul Train. It was fun.
God.
And during my recovery, I was in so much pain. It would look like I was crying because I'd have tears running out of my eyes all the time. It was excruciating pain. I wasn't really crying. My eyes were like they were. My mother said, "You got tears in your eyes all the time. What is going on, Les Paul?" I said, "My head hurts so bad, I can't stand it." So she'd walk in the room and start singing to me. When I felt my worst and I couldn't sleep, I mean, I'd have a nauseous stomach. It'd be that bad. The pain was just unbelievable. I don't know how a person could live with the pain I used to go through all on a regular basis. And I still have it sometimes today, but I've learned how to handle it much better. But she would start singing to me. And she said, "I want you to go in your room." I'm telling you a lot more than I've told you. And she said, "I want you to lay down." I said, "Mom, it kills my head to lay down." She said, "I'm going to sing to you." And I'm a man, by then 23 years old. and my mother singing to me.
Aww.
And it takes the pain away to focus on her voice singing. She had a lovely voice. She sang all kinds of different music, and it was beautiful when she sang. I always loved to hear her sing when I was a kid. I mean, she went all over the place singing in churches and bands, all kinds of things. And so her music was my therapy. It really was.
That's
and
awesome.
She used to say,
now, what name a song like, you know, during the era, like what was one of the songs that we'd recognize? I realize there's some older ones, but what was one of the songs that you liked that she would sing to you? Can you remember any of them?
Songs like Chances are, cause I went to sleep in the moment that she's talking to you. That.
Oh, yeah.
She sang that all the time. She loved to sing. She sang the Beatles, too, though. That's a funny thing. She sang Beatles songs to me. And this was a lady in her 60s at the time, late 60s.
Well,
and
if she could carry a tune and she heard it, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure it's like playing piano by ear. You know, she knew all the musical part of it. So once she heard it a few times, I bet she picked it right up.
Yeah. Well, she would go in my bedroom and look at all my record albums. And I had all of Paul McCartney's. I had all the Beatles. I'd have Aerosmith. I'd have some country music. I'd have some hip-hop, a little bit of it. I'd have all kinds of music. And she'd go through, do you like this? And nah. And then she'd sing a song by Seals and Crofts. Summer breeze makes me feel fine. You know that song?
Oh, yeah.
More than I love the jasmine in my mind. That one.
Yep.
And
Seals and Crofts.
I would just suddenly come to life and my pain would go away. And it was just unbelievable. It wouldn't go away, but it'd become much bearable, much more bearable. And so
right.
I can truly say, my mother, they might say she didn't go to school because there's all kinds of tools, there's all kinds of classes they have to go through to become a professional music therapist, but they're amazing people. I got to meet at the American Music Therapy Association's annual conference about a year and a half, maybe a little longer ago. I got to go as a guest by Albie Manis, the director. I was blown away at what I met. And I must have spoke to 700 of them. I mean, there were so many people there, I couldn't possibly speak to all of them, but they kept hearing my story, and then my story was going all over the whole building, and they were coming and meeting me. They're saying, woke up to a coma, from a coma, to the Beatles song? She said, one lady goes, did you know that's my dream, to work with someone like you? I'm saying, why? And she says, because we never see the effect of what we work on after the person stops coming to see us as a music therapist.
Oh,
yeah. And she said, you didn't. Yeah. She goes, you didn't go through music therapy of the same kind of piece, but you really did. And, I mean, I met with all of them, all kinds of really cool people, music therapists. Rock. They're awesome. Everybody needs to know one. Everybody needs to meet one that has any kind of brain injury or any related disability.
Well, it sounds like we've got one, and that's what I'm reading along here. I'm going to give it another paragraph on this. This is nice. We'll ping pong around, and then Derek, a new member who's been in the chat, is on the line, and I'll put him on, and I don't know if you... what are your plans tonight?
I'll
Les
stick around.
Paul is with Andrea. They have a date tonight.
Well, I've gotten home just now. I'm home.
Short date.
I know.
Okay.
Well, we were out a long time today.
Well, good. Okay, well, I'm going to just get off that subject and say, but in reality, music uses both right and left, using two parallel systems. Also, speech and music overlap in brain regions related to syntax, meaning, and memory. Because of Because of much greater overlap of music and language in infants, an entirely different view has recently been put forth that language exists and develops as a specialized type of music. For this view, music is defined as a generalized creative ability with sound elements such as timbre, rhythm, and pitch. There are many reasons to adopt this new view. Every healthy person appreciates some sort of music. Infants don't show the same left-right separation until much later. Appreciation of music, timbre actually needs a millisecond activity as well as speech, and children show language, brain development in music, brain development are parallel for many years. In this view, as children develop into adults, the culturally determined language and culturally determined music develops from one function into two different streams of the brain. Language more on the left and music on the right and the left. In Western society, people are segregated into musicians and general populations, whereas in many other societies, everyone performs, sings, dances, and listens. This distance has biased studies in infants in the West when comparing music and language development. Studies should compare ordinary language with ordinary musical sound processing. Instead, studies have been comparing ordinary language with prodigy or trained music. When comparing ordinary music and ordinary language, there is much more overlap in children between language and music. Interesting. So they're just putting music and speech on the same two different roads that merge in the brain. I think so. Here, let me put on area code 675. Is this Derek?
Yes.
How are you doing tonight, Derek?
I'm doing great, Kim. I'm enjoying your show. Can you hear me on the radio?
I can. We can hear you all over the world, and you sound great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, this is really, I thought it was going to be boring. Not boring, but I thought, you know, listen to music. This thing, you know. Anyway, this has turned into something really incredible. Really incredible. It's right up my alley. I can identify with every single thing you're talking about. I'm going to, real fast, tell you what happened to me and then what I'm doing. And I'm hoping I can see it getting better and better. I'm hoping to get better every day, you know.
Yeah.
I had a frontal lobe. I had a motorcycle accident. I wasn't wearing a helmet, and I had a frontal lobe left side of my brain. It was my injury, my frontal left side. But anyway, it busted my whole top of my head apart, open, and yeah, it was horrible. You know, I had to put me in a coma in there because I had 49 broken bones and the whole nine.
Wow. Oops. It looks like Derek dropped off the line. I'm not sure what happened to you, Derek. Whoops, sorry. Les Paul's still there, but Derek dropped off the line.
Yeah, I'm still here.
I'm not sure if Blog Talk Radio did that or, oh, I lost you. You can dial back in. I'm not sure why you got lost, Derek. We've had some technical, well, we haven't, but Blog Talk Radio's been having some technical difficulties, and if you didn't hit the button accidentally, then they dropped you accidentally because I'm sitting back with my feet up on my wireless headset, and I'm not near anything that can dump anybody, so it taint me. But I think this would be a good time, and this will give you time to dial in again, Derek, and tell us the rest about your accident. But when we were singing, talking about voice and music and the merging of those things, one of the songs, and I think this is a good segue for it, because we were just finishing up with what Les Paul was saying, and then we'll finish hearing yours, and I'll see if I can find a segue song for you. But in fact, I had a tape I could have, you know, it's probably still on here. If we run out of time later, I might play the rest of the tape for you. But in any case, this song is by a guy who I just love. I happen to have met this one in person. The first fella, Chris Dukes, is from New York, and we have talked on the phone, and I was really blessed to have several conversations with him and play a lot of his music. But this guy, I actually met in person, and in a couple weeks he's going to be playing at a place. He was on tour 3 weeks ago when we did the 4-hour music show, and so he did a pre-recorded thing with me in the afternoon when he had a few minutes. But it's what Les Paul was doing back in his story during that time in his life. And a lot of us, whether it's physical or psychological, this is something we all face probably at more than one time in our life. But this is Daniel Christian singing, what else? Find My Voice.
Question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Maybe we all have a role to play. Maybe this is my inauguration. Until I see. Finally getting used to my own skin. Never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are. Now it's time.
If you're on Facebook, of course, it's facebook.com/ DanielChristianMusic. Or the website, Daniel Christian Music. Be sure to check him out. I have a feeling that he may hit the contemporary Christian charts and stick. I just got a hunch about that one. Looks like Derek came back. You guys aren't going to believe what happened, Les Paul. The whole studio kicked me out. I could only see half the chat.
Oh, wow.
And had no studio, so I don't even know how I got back in here. So, Derek, as I'm unmuting you, I'll just let you know that I lost the whole studio while that song was on, and I was afraid I wouldn't be able to come back. Are you with me again, Derek?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Good. Sorry about that.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Big trouble. Okay, motorcycle accident, no helmet, broke just about every bone in your body. How long ago was this?
This was June 13th. It was 2010.
Okay.
3 years ago, actually. Yeah.
That's not very long.
No, I'm pretty lucky. I had a TBI. It's horrible. I got road rash on my back, and I wrecked on a highway. Anyway, it is very. I had to learn how to talk. I didn't know who my mother was. I didn't know who anybody was when I awoke. This is for weeks and weeks and weeks. I didn't know who anybody was. Not even my own mother. And I thought they were keeping me alive and using my parts for other people, my body parts. So they kept looking in my eyes and the scopes or whatever to see my eyeballs and my head and all these bandages all over my fingers, cast on my hands and cast on my feet. And, I couldn't move. I was tied down to the bed too. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's my head. And I couldn't talk or anything, so, oh, gosh. And this goes on for weeks, Anyway,
sure.
Yeah, that feeling, I think it was about a month, I guess, I felt that way. And then I started learning who my mom was and everything. Anyway, every day I practice with my guitar. I've played guitar for about 20 years. I have electric guitar. I bought a new one after my brain injury, and they said it'd be very good for me. Yes.
Did you remember? I mean, considering kind of shape you were in, you did when you put your hand on the guitar. You remembered
some basics. Some basic chord. Some basic
C-G.
Scales. Up and down the scales. You learn from your teacher how to play different scales. But my main problem is today, I lost a lot of memory, too, of songs, how to play songs, stuff like that, too. I'm not going to tell you I'm a prodigy about guitar. I lost all that, Anyway, I'm getting it back. Anyway, I lost my left and my right coordination of my arms, my movement. In other words, I try to play with my left hand and my right hand strums the strings. It ain't the same. I strum the. What I think I'm doing is different than what I'm actually doing. Different time. And that's what I'm working on is trying to keep it constant the right way. because it gets off very, I get off very easy. Keeping the rhythm, I just lose it, you know, my thought. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, this isn't me. I can't even keep a rhythm, and it gets me so frustrated. But over
well, you know,
and over
that's
and over,
exactly
yeah.
what the kind of thing Les Paul is talking about. And I guess aside from the American Music Therapy Association that you might want to look up, that metronome, and I laughed
yeah.
at Les Paul because he was talking about, apparently they've got some, you know, really new funky techno metronomes, but my grandpa,
okay.
when I was a little girl, had the piano, and he made one of my uncles play, and we've got one of those, I've wound up getting one of those, the original old-fashioned
yes.
wooden metronome that you wind up on the
oh,
side.
Yes. Yes. Oh, wow. You got a pretty old one then.
Oh, yeah. It's
that's older. It's
older
yeah.
than me. And I'm older than you. So.
I told you my age, didn't I? On the screen there, 41.
Yeah, I got about a decade on you. And
yeah. Well, you're not old by any means. I can't believe I'm old. I can't believe I'm 40. I cannot believe that. I feel like I'm maybe 13, and I'm not joking. From my head injury, I feel like before my head injury, I felt like I was 90. Now I feel like I'm 13, maybe, or 12, or something like that.
Well, it's because you're learning so many things over again, and this is a new. It's the same world, but a new perspective and vision of the world that you're in. But yeah, Les Paul,
yes.
you went through the same type of thing with being off on the beat and the cadence and all that, and just the practice,
yes.
practice comes back. But it seems to really stimulate your brain, like with both of you guys, because you know, like you said, you played for the guitar I used to play. Unfortunately, I gave it up in lieu of long fingernails at some silly point. But when I was a young girl, I played for about 10 years. And I used to play and go to nursing homes.
Wow.
And I would play and sing. And then I started
keep
doing
a rhythm.
Some,
yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit of that. But, you know,
yeah.
it was so imprinted in you because that was something that you loved and had bonded with, that I think that's going to be a great road back to recovery. But I'm sure it's hard to be patient when you know where you were and you're not there right now. But it's
yeah.
a journey. It's a journey, and you're definitely, the music, I think, is going to be a big element in your recovery as it was with Les Paul. And with me, I listened to a lot of music, too. They were old songs that I remembered the words to.
Okay.
You know, and I'd hear them over and over, because maybe I'd read something and I couldn't remember what I just read, so I'd get frustrated like that. Or I'd see a movie.
Me, too.
And I could generally tell you what it's about, kind of, but I really couldn't tell you any detail, and by tomorrow I could probably just remember
even,
whether I liked it or not, you know?
That's me. Yeah. yeah. Yeah,
what
that's
about
exactly where I'm at.
But tell yourself you're going to remember, even if you don't.
That's to you, Derek.
Yes, I'm the same way. That, and if I can keep my attention on the show that's on, my mind kind of wanders off. If it's something I'm in, and if it's something that I like, I'm really involved in it. And if somebody, say I get something going on around me, noise or something like that, my attention will go on to that immediately and not
oh.
the TV show. So that's the other thing I'm working on is my attention. There's different tools. So I'm going to Indiana University. They have a program there that's on cognitive and linguistic training, and I go there twice a week.
Wow.
For 1 hour. Yeah, 1 hour each. It's free for you know, like, hey, we're gonna, you know, it's not that way. You have to have a TBI, which is very, very bad in my situation, you know, for anybody. And they try to help people. Yeah, it's really neat. It's a neat thing. They help little kids that have speech problems, you know, and, yeah, it's very good school they have, you know. It's very good for people. But, yeah, I go twice a week. It's right now, it's keeping me busy. It's real instructive on, you know, things that have been proven to help people keep their attention focused on a certain thing. I'm working on my memory, my memory skills and my speed skills. I'm very slow. That's embarrassing to say, but yeah, I'm slower than I used to be. You know,
well, that's okay. You know, you're not that far into your injury. You've got time to keep working on that. I got kicked out of the studio again, so I've got you guys who have your mic open. I'm trying to get back into the studio, but it just keeps spinning. I'm hoping it'll work this time. But, well, that's cool. So you're not responding. That's a trip. Okay, I got the studio back. Thanks. It was just the second time that I got kicked out of the studio. So in the chat room, we have a clinician of interactive metronome. And,
yeah, I've seen that.
Do you know what that is, Les Paul, if the caller isn't going to call in and tell us?
It's called interactive metronome therapy. I haven't had it, but it's supposed to be amazing. It helps people. It helps you get your body's rhythm back. It helps you get your mind and your brain's rhythm back.
Oh.
Yes.
In a few minutes, I'm going to switch to my home phone because I'm on my cell phone in my kitchen. And
yeah, you should call back in.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So, interactive metronome is very wonderful. And when I was at the Music Therapy Association, one thing we did, and this was several hundred people in this gigantic arts auditorium, and a lady dressed in Indian garb, she said, place your hand on your heart. And they had these huge, I don't know what you call these big drums, they're really deep bass drums, and they're going boom, 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 boom. And she said, think of your heartbeat. And then we beat on our chest going boom, 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 boom. And she starts dancing, and they start handing out shakers and all kinds of musical instruments out to the audience that are not necessarily trained on all of this stuff. And they said, okay, here's you. And they gave me some bongos, and then they gave me some Ludwig $1,500 bongos that were $1,500 a piece, two of them. And I'm sitting there saying, oh, my goodness. And then they say, play and do not stop. And so I'm just, I said, I don't know how you do tonight. And so while she's going boom, 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 and the whole audience, and there's at least 300 to 350 people in this big auditorium, started doing that sound. It was unbelievable. And I could feel my mind opening up like pores from sweating, like my mind's pores were sweating and opening up the pores. And I started to think about the music, and my mind was saying, wow, my memory is getting better. I'm not kidding.
Yes.
I have significant memory problems. It's very well disguised by my voice, but I have significant memory problems. When I left that place, I felt so phenomenal, I could not go to sleep for a couple of days. It was just mind-boggling.
Well, so especially all the percussives like that, you'd feel your insides vibrating almost the vibration of the energy from all those percussive instruments at the same time,
exactly.
I would think.
And Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead was supposed to be there, and he's their percussionist. And he they played a video of him saying, I apologize for not being able to be here. I don't know if it's surgery or what, I'm forgetting. But they had someone fill in for him that was absolutely top-notch, world-class around the planet. And he proceeded to tear up those bongos. As I had shakers then in my hand. We kept trading out instruments. We did it for three solid hours. Wow. I have never had so much fun. I've never held so many musical instruments in my whole life. I mean, it was a blast. It was the most exciting thing I can say I've ever done since then in that kind of a thing. And music therapy just brought me to life. I was like, wow, it's like it put me on a higher plane that I didn't know existed. It was beyond belief. I can't describe it unless you were there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, that's really a neat experience, to have. One of the, another segue, and then we'll come back. Another one of the people on here and talk about a journey. This is funny how music, you know, music songs or lyrics, even music, I guess, that people write do mirror the emotions of people a lot. And this guy, Philip Zack, had been a singer, had a regular type band, and had to have that throat surgery that a lot of the musicians have to have when they lose their voice. Like Matthew West, I know, had it not long ago, and one of the more famous gals had it, but this guy had it, and so he was forced to go a different direction. Music was still extremely instrumental, no pun intended. Music was instrumental in his recovery. Hey, do you like that? I wish I was by the applause button. That is so amusing. But what this guy did instead of singing, that was pretty funny. Now, see, when you can start to amuse yourself like that, but here's what he did in channeling his recovery, where he had just been a straight, you know, band singer before. This is 3 minutes of someone else's alternative to music in recovery and how they made a shift.
What if I
That was a song called What If by Arrows and Sound. I guess I didn't tell you before that Philip Zack, the one who started, who wrote all of this music and has his own studio, thanks, Derek, he calls himself Arrows and Sound. And so for those of you out there listening, there's arrowsandsound.com is the website. And if you're on Facebook and you want to tell him you like his music, it is, of course, you're on Facebook.com. So you look up arrows and sound. And Philip is actually going to be a guest on my show. Probably it'll be about 4 weeks or so, but he is going to come on the show and talk about recovery. Another thing that you guys, I did mention to you guys, I'm not going to play it again tonight. I did the other night, but another musician, it was not funny, but it was kind of bizarre. When I was out looking for some indie music, the first time I cast my net, there were 6 musicians that responded, and of those musicians, 2 of them had some kind of an attachment to a brain injury. With Garfan, that's GARFAN.com, you might even be able to find let's see, Derek, if you're on Facebook, it would be under Dale Hayes, D-A-L-E, and then H-A-Y-E-S, and you ought to see a big guy playing the guitar. But Garfan is the name of the band. His wife is the one who had a terrible, not that any of them are good, but had an aneurysm just like mine, a rupture just like Les's, but she didn't fare so well. And the second one is a friend of mine from way back who I hadn't talked to for a decade or decade and a half. And it is John Cruz. And it was interesting. We hadn't talked in all that time. And then I found out I was looking for some indie music for my show. And I wanted to find him because I had that old CD where he had Palm of Your Hand and Hearts with Eyes and all these songs, and I just loved him. I knew that, you know, because we were friends and just the way John is, that he wouldn't care if I did, but I wanted to find him. And it was weird when I found him just a month before, and here we'd been 15 years since we talked to each other. They found a brain tumor on his brain stem, and he's proceeded to go through, I think, 28 radiation treatments. And he just finished up with those and was going to be getting the imagery done to see how that worked for him. And he's going to be on my show. Let's see, this Wednesday will be the 9/11 show, a survivor tribute to 9/11. And then the following Wednesday, John Cruz from the blues band is going to come on and talk to us about his brain tumor, what started happening to make him know that something was wrong, and then what it was like to hear that he had a brain tumor, what this time has been like for him, that this treatment's been going on since he was diagnosed, which was only a few months ago, and 28 radiation treatments, and is going to tell us some things that have helped him and some things that haven't been so helpful to him. So he's going to be coming on. Then I think I've got someone in between, and then the following week, Philip Zack of Arrows and Sound is going to be coming on to talk to me, and he's just very happy to share his music with Brain Injury Radio. And though he did not have a brain injury, he really felt like he could relate when I was talking to him, because at the time his voice went south on him, he was a professional, you know, he was making his living singing, and when your voice goes away, You know, that's kind of like I made my living in sales. If your voice goes away, you're kind of not in good shape. And there's a long period of time that you don't know if you're going to get it back or not. You know, these people, I watched Matthew West, if any of you like contemporary Christian music. I'm trying to think of the name of the song, and I'll check on my iPad when I have a minute to divert my attention. But he wrote a song, and it's about the time just when he found out, got his diagnosis about this throat issue, and how he communicated with his family by writing on signs and a chalkboard, and then him getting rolled down into the surgical suite, the time it took him to recover. And then, of course, obviously he recovered well because he made this video about the whole thing. But, you know, whenever you lose something that, and not that you've taken for granted, maybe you've taken it half for granted and half been extremely grateful for it, but it's been a part of your life. The other night, Les Paul was also on when I was talking about self-definition, and we were talking about definition either being superficial, things like I'm blonde, or I'm a type A personality, or just I'm a brain injury survivor, like that's the total of what you are. Labels, superficial labels versus more core forms of identity for ourselves. And we were reading something on that the other night. But in any case, Philip went through that procedure and went through kind of the same thing that that I think Matt did. And I think he'll be a very good interview, and I think we'll all be able to relate to what he has to say and vice versa. So I'll be anxious to have him on as well. But that's how he channeled straight singing, was adding this techno back that he's doing. And he has his own studio, and I think on that arrowsandsound.com site, you can look at that. I think you can take a look at that, and there's even like a tour of his studio and a couple of video slices. If not, there's a link to it someplace. But anyway, that's another way that music can heal, is by channeling it in a different way than you did before. And that kind of reminded me of that when you were talking about the percussive, you know, how that vibration, that musical vibration, you could feel it inside you, and it stimulated your brain activity, you know, because you could relate to it. And another person we had as a guest, I had as a guest once, and it's been a long time ago now, but she was so sweet. I know a lot of you remember her, Bree. Bree and Peltier, that's it. She has a fancy French last name. But she was a beautiful young model, young lady who was in an accident and is in a wheelchair, paralyzed pretty much from her neck down. And as if that hadn't been bad enough, there was a terrible fire, and she was caught in her apartment, started on fire. And somebody went in and got her, and they saved her, but they weren't able to grab her wheelchair, and it wound up burning up. And Medicaid that she was on apparently only allows you, I don't know, I can't even tell you what, one wheelchair every 3 to 5 years or some strange bureaucratic rule, no contingency for it burning up in a fire, I guess. And so here this poor thing had no wheelchair. And she has some friends on another show on Blog Talk Radio, and one of them in the group is named Donald Black Fox, and he owns Spirit Wind Records. And Donald is an oldie but a goodie. He played with, like, he did openers for, like, Fats Domino and several of the old famous musicians, and a lot of genres as well. He said that the music business had been very good to him over his life, and he wanted the opportunity to give back. And his business, like I said now, is Spirit Wind Records, and you might be able to tell by his name, Black Fox, that Donald is of Native American heritage, and Spirit Wind Records is a collection of artists who are Native American, and he produces music for them, and lots of great gals and guys and groups, and that's strictly what his label is. But one of the things he's done to give back, when I interviewed him on my old show a long time ago, he was just finishing a CD where these musicians all volunteered a song to donate a song to this CD that was going to domestic abuse places. He did another one for veterans, and all of the proceeds of these go to the places. Like, I forgot what the name of the domestic violence shelter system was, but all of the proceeds of the CD, the musicians donated their time. Donald used his studio and volunteered his resources, and they've made several different CDs. They just got done with one on suicide awareness not long ago. Well, in the middle of all that is Bree, who's also a regular on that show, so they know each other. Bree has lost her wheelchair, and so Donald pulled the gang together one more time and made a CD, the proceeds of which went to buy Bree her favorite color, purple, and it's got a big engine on it, so she can really spin around now. But the proceeds of this CD is what bought her new wheelchair, and love and friendship and people coming together. And Bree had done a little music in her day, has played some piano, not a lot. And after her accident, like Derek was talking about and Les Paul was talking about, you know, she wasn't doing it as much. It was like, you know, you kind of can't do it the way you did it before, and so you're almost afraid of it for a minute, or could be. You know, if you weren't encouraged like you got with your mom, Les Paul, other people could be kind of scared, you know, that they've lost something that they thought they had before. But
yeah.
I'm going to just play. This is 3 minutes, and then I'll be right back to the person who's going to go back and tell us about that metronome. But long as I'm here, Bree actually played the piano on one of the songs of her CD, of the CD that bought her wheelchair after the fire. And so this song, and by the way, her handle, if you see her out and about in the chats, and it's really true for her, is Earthbound Angel. And so this is the name of this 3-minute song. It's Earthbound Angel, and Bree is playing the piano on it. So that's pretty awesome. 3 minutes. We'll be right back. Thank you. All right. And that was Bree. And I put in the chat room Spirit Wind Records if you want to check out Donald Black Fox's business. But she was very, very brave. She's been so brave and had such a good attitude through being put in the chair in the first place, having to need to be put in the chair, and then the horrible time in between after the fire. And she was so scared. She's such a sweet, sweet girl. If you go back and listen to the interview, you'll see that and you'll love her too. But I think that was pretty cool that she got to, she was brave enough to play the piano for one of the cuts on that CD that helped her to get her wheelchair. So, but I also think it's a real testament of people coming together for the greater good and lending out a hand to help somebody be independent. But now we've heard a singer gone techno and some nice Native American music, and we've heard some contemporary Christian music, and we'll be hearing some other music. But first, we were talking about the metronome a while back, and I was talking about how I have an antique that is really more of a fond, memorable memento from my grandpa. I'll never forget. He was an old Italian grandpa, and Craig, you might be able to envision this, but my Uncle Tony was 10 years older than me, so when I was a little kid and spending the night at my Nana and Grandpa's house, you know, I was 6 and Tony was 16. So he had to play piano, and Grandpa was a real driver. Every one of his kids had to play an instrument. It was a must-do thing for all of his kids. And I remember Uncle Tony sitting there playing the piano, and the old metronome on top of the old wood piano was up there, you know, doing the deal. And my grandpa was tapping his foot, you know, he'd tap his foot, and then he'd go, "No, Tony," and smack him upside the head. You know, he'd start going with the metronome and doing the clapping. Anyway, it was kind of an amusing thing. He was much nicer to me, obviously, the grandkid, because when it was my turn to do that and I wanted to try it, he wrote with pencil on the keys to help me learn the chords. And I knew how to play two songs from the old wooden piano bench that opened up. And I wonder where that went. That would have been cool to have. At least the music would have been, but one song was called Strawberries Pink, Apple Blossoms White. Can't even tell you how that goes, but I remember the title of it because, it was a fond imprint. And then Try to Remember the Kind of September, and I bet your mom knew that one, Les Paul. But so, Craig, what is the 21st century metronome, and what kind of a study is that anyway?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
So while the metronome, it is a cognitive rehabilitation tool that a lot of speech language pathologists and occupational therapists might use. It helps impulsivity, it helps ADHD, it helps spinal cord injury, it helps balance issues, it helps memory, and basically you time your eyes, your ears, and your body all together. It's timing your brain. It's learning how to make your brain do what you want it to do.
So is it a machine now, or is it software on the computer, or is it still like, can't be like my old wooden thing?
It's both. You have things that go on your feet, on your hands, and some people have done some real innovative other things with it, put it on gadgets. You know, but it is to get your body to respond in the sequence that you want it to.
Wow. So did you do that as part – you were a therapist at one time. And
I was a behavioralist. A lot different.
Okay. Tell me the difference. I was talking to a neuropsychologist the other night, and I meant to ask him – he was talking about the old days before they made neuropsychologists, and I meant to go back and ask him, and I think he might be one of our new hosts, and Dr. Orr is getting trained this week and should be starting next week, Craig. So, but anyway, I wanted to ask David the other night, well, when was it that neuropsychology broke out from regular psychology, but I never asked him. So with you, what's the difference between like a counselor, a therapist, what does a behavioralist do?
Well, I worked with severely persons with severe disabilities. Every disability you can think of, CP, autism, Prader-Willi, and I came in at a time where it was considered positive behavior support. You know, where you reward people, you know, kind of like the cookie. You know, here's a cookie if you do what you're supposed to. But you would come
right.
up with what's called a positive behavior support plan, and you would treat their what we would say were bad behaviors, and we would come up with a plan to counteract them with to do the right thing with positive behavior support.
That's a lot like they talk about. I mean, I don't want to compare it to that, but there's a way of training your dog that's called the praise method, and it means instead of like the old days when I was a little kid and our dog would make a mess in the house, they would rub their nose in it, spank them, and put them outside. Then it trended away from, you know, that kind of violence, and said a dog doesn't remember, you know, 20 minutes later what it did and that it did anything wrong. And so what you do is you never do that rubbing their nose in it and beat on them. You do the praise method, and that's when they do something right outside. You praise them for that, and the animals
yeah.
live for your love and acceptance. And so they're going to respond to the praise method a lot better than they will to something that intimidates them. So,
see, I started practicing in about 1999, 2000, and you know, this is when people were just being deinstitutionalized with severe disabilities, and they were coming from a system where they were had negative reinforcements. You know, you know, you don't do it; you say, "I down and zap ya," you know, type thing.
Right.
And in all seriousness, that a lot of people were dying. So when they came out into the community, they had the right, and so, but. You know, for instance, somebody say they were 10 pounds outside their outside weight. It could be an agency's or the state's place to say, well, you're outside your ideal weight. You have to go on a diet. And so this is, I can't mention any names, but I can remember one instance. This guy just tore up his house because this 5'2", 350-pound lady told this 6'1", 200-pound guy he couldn't have seconds if she had thirds.
Wow.
One was the staff, one was the client. One had a positive behavior support plan, the other didn't.
Wow. So when everybody was coming out of the institutions, as you say, and they were, you know, changing the thought back when the pioneers were around and when you started out, where were these people going? I mean, if their families allowed them to be put in an institution.
It was called supportive living, residential services, you know, whether it's a, you know, in our state, we have waivered services for people with developmental disabilities. They have different types of waivers, adult family homes, you know, nursing homes type things, and then supportive living, which is a residential service. Ideally, they were supposed, you know, they were supposed to live in the community in their own home. And, you know, they got services, but, you know, they had to pay for their home, so, you know, they had to have a couple roommates, and it was supposed to be that they had choice. But the residential guidelines, and there's 7 points, one of them was power and choice, but it always came down to health and safety. And anything's risky. And that's where a curriculum that I did way back then was called the Dignity of Risk, because these folks never had the opportunity to risk. And so a lot of times, and of course I didn't see this until after I was done, you know, not doing it, that they would
right.
have what we would consider behavioral excesses, because they were expressing their freedom to have the freedom of expression. But, you know, when I was in there, I was still under the mindset if they couldn't follow these positive behavior support plans, then, you know, they need more drugs. We need to get them in. Let's get higher doses of psychotropics in them. You know, they're not compliant. They're non-compliant.
Right. Well, that keeps everybody on the floor quiet. I found that out the hard way myself. So I get why they do that, especially I'm not condoning it. That's not what I meant. I meant that I understand it because I've been there, done it. But they, especially if they're understaffed, but even if they're not understaffed, it just keeps everybody low maintenance, you know, a lot lower maintenance.
And I had my injury, me being what I was, and my doctor knowing it. And actually, I went to the physician's aide because he was actually cooler than my doctor. He would always, what do you think we should do? And so I tried the psychotropic route myself because that's what I was taught, and I almost killed myself.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And so, and that's when I learned, maybe these books aren't right. And then I got looking, at the pharmaceutical companies that are teaching us this. Of course they're not right.
Right.
But it's still how people are practiced, If you find people that are getting services from the state with a developmental disability, in most states they are on a psychotropic drug. And they're paying anywhere from $300 to $600 a month for those drugs that, of course, me and you couldn't afford. But nevertheless, since the state's buying it, the pharmaceuticals have a cut. They got the perfect income. They don't.
Oh,
want
yeah.
Some of them are on 10 drugs. Can you imagine $6,000 a month in drugs?
Well, actually, 20 million people. I can't imagine it. One of my dad's drugs, one of them, they went to pick up the other day, and a couple scary things. First of all, is I don't believe that the generics are exactly the same as the brand name drugs. I think there's got to be a difference in the potion because people react differently. But under the VA and the new, I'm assuming if the VA is doing it and Medicaid is doing it, that as our healthcare trends towards socialized medicine, that there will all be on generics. But one of the drugs that my dad, just one, and with his Parkinson's, I didn't ask, but I think he probably takes maybe four drugs, but one of them is $830 a month.
Well, and you're right about the generic, because, like, Pfizer is not going to give up their formula just because they now have became non-patentable, because you can only have patented medicines for so long. They reverse engineer them to come up with the formula.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I think it's crazy. It's crazy. I don't know. Anyway, my dad did respond when they let him be on one of the brand names of the drugs, and then that was one of the cuts. That stuff's going to be coming. I was telling one the other night, this isn't the swellest one to tell in a room of guys, but I'm going to learn more as I go. But, for example, a woman always used to have a pap smear and a mammogram every year. I'm over 50 years old, and from whatever age it started, that's what the rule has been all these years, that we get that done every year. And now the Medicare, anyway, which is another form of government insurance that everyone is going to be trending toward, will only allow you to do it every 2 years on the mammogram, and I think every three on the pap smear. And suddenly, after all these years, were they overrunning the tests in the first place, or are we just getting longer before cancer gets discovered and starts spreading by not having the tests now? I mean, either they were right then or they were right now, but it's all about the politics in medicine right now.
Well, of course, these people who make the medicine and the equipment, they're going to want to have the treatment done as much as fiscally possible. And so who knows?
Well, that's what's crazy. My dad, before he started on that, on a brand name drug, it was a different drug that was still almost in that $700 to $800 range. And he responded really well to it. And then they stopped. VA doesn't even carry our, and each VA in each state, I guess, can handle themselves differently however they want to, but here where we are, they carry no generics. It's not a matter of talking the doctor into it or telling the doctor, hey, I really did notice a difference between the brand and the generic, the option just isn't there because they simply don't carry any brand name drugs out of the VA.
One of the things you can do is start looking online, and the best reverse engineers in the world of pharmaceuticals are in India. You just got to be careful which company you go to, because you know you don't want to go to the person making it out of his toilet. You want to go to the person making it, you know, in a good environment. And so, but actually, I get some of my medicine. I get all my medicine from India, and I did get a bad one once, but I don't deal with that manufacturer anymore. You just got to, you know, and you can tell, you know, and then unfortunately, if your dad can't tell you, you're not, you know, you guys will have to pay attention to what's going on, but you can get a fairly good medicine. The problem with reverse engineering, it's hard to get exacts because it's like taking a cake apart, figuring out how to make it after it's baked.
Yeah.
So they're trying to figure out, you know, because it's not just the ingredients, it's how you mix the ingredients, how you cook the ingredients, and how you cool the ingredients that make the medicine. It's just not putting the stuff together. You know, it's just like a cake. You know, imagine if you didn't beat the eggs, and you just put the eggs in, throw it in a bowl, and how would your cake turn out?
Right. Well,
so
how would you know?
I
mean, how do you know? Like, first of all, when you do that kind of thing, is it like, do you mail your... like email your prescription, or can you just get a hold of one of these?
You order it online, and they ship it to you, mail. And and you know, I would stick with one of the companies that say that they have the equivalency of the FDA approval in India, because they have their version of the FDA there. You know, it doesn't. You know, and then again, there's not every company has the same quality, so you may have to try a couple companies. And I mean, you do a little research, you cut down the bad ones. Just like Viagra, you know, it's a generic drug in every country but the United States for men.
You're kidding.
Really?
Well, of course not, yeah. Yeah, the United States.
It's about $10 a pill here, I think, for men. So I don't know what they get in a bottle, but yeah, $10 a pill, that's...
versus something like 50 cents?
Right, for what it takes to make it. That's crazy.
No, that's what they sell it for. I get online and always I follow the pharmaceuticals for some reason.
Well, that
yeah,
might
be really
handy.
Right, and of course now the government, of course, that's how powerful the pharmaceutical companies are. Even though it's now a generic drug, you know, the government, you know, is trying to stop people from getting the medicine from there. You know, they can't. They can confiscate, and these you know, they're such, even at 50 cents a pill, these companies are such a high market in it. If you don't get your order, they'll ship it another way to you. You know, you just got to pay the tracking fee. You know,
well, and not all of the pharmacies in the United States. Some of the pharmacies in the United States are buying from India and other places because the American pill companies aren't as competitive, and the pharmacies want to squeeze as much profit out as they can. So I know that.
Well, actually, a lot of the pharmacies buy it not because of that. They buy it because the Indian companies make it better than the U.S. companies.
Wow.
India is the number one pharmaceutical manufacturer in the world. They make 90% of all the world's pharmaceuticals.
I didn't know that.
Wow, I didn't either.
Wow.
90%.
Number one technological workforce and the number one pharmaceutical workforce in the world.
Wow!
And they are the best. If you want tech help, you want somebody from India, not somebody from the U.S. Like
wow.
If you get a Dell computer, they outsource to Indonesia, Philippines, and India. You want India. You know, you don't want anyone in the Dell in America either, because they don't know anything about their products. You want the guys in India. They get you through your problem immediately.
Well, I wonder why so many of the doctors from India are coming here. They've got the best drugs there. They're learning some technology,
no money.
Maybe. No money.
Yeah, there's a billion people, and there's a lot of doctors here where there's not a lot of doctors here. It's much easier to and they're a lot brighter than we are. And I don't mean that in a bad way. They just put the effort in to become
knowledgeable about what they're doing.
I mean, you have incentive. But go on, yeah.
Right, and because actually the president of our nonprofit is she's a naturalist. She's born in the United States, but her dad was an Indian scientist.
Wow.
And her mom was an American, and
okay.
Shanti, and she went to college, and she's really struggling because of her brain injury, and her sister's just right now going through her excerpts for her doctorate degree, and she's heading somewhere over in the Massachusetts area now, and I can't remember what she's doing, but she's been in school for 15 years, and so they put a lot of value into education and knowing what you're doing, and we really don't have that value here in the United States.
No, I don't think we do. I was talking the other... Uh-oh, it's telling me 90 seconds. I didn't even know how long this was booked for, but one thing I will do, I'll bring us over into overtime for a second, and I'm going to, by the time she says 60 seconds, I ought to find my 51-second outro. How long are we having a sponsor? We'd like to thank our sponsor, Gordon Johnson of TBI Law. You can find them at tbilaw.com. Call in quick, 60 seconds, 424-243-9540, 424-243-9540. Otherwise, you'll be hearing what comes after this in the archive. This is something I believe we all have, and it's a guardian angel by Leah West. Check out Leah at leahwest.com, and good night to all those who are leaving. We'll be back in 51 seconds.
God replies, yes, it's your time to leave. But don't you worry, you won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you. Quietly hoping and praying, everyone is.
And that's Leah West with Guardian Angel, and that brings us over into overtime. I don't have to remind you guys on the switchboard that this portion of the show is also recorded. And it looks like Eric didn't make it in time to dial in. I think he was trying to dial in when it was about 10 seconds long. That is a drag. So he probably can't hear. But... So we were just, I didn't want to just have endist abruptus, even though we didn't have any plan for this show tonight, but it's really been very interesting, actually. So India is the place to outsource for the medication. I wonder why aren't we more competitive with that in the United States? We're outsourcing everything. How hard can be pushing ingredients together? The common drug dealers don't have any problem with it. Why do the experts here in the U.S.?
Because nobody has the motivation. Nobody's motivated. There's not, nobody wants to make it. And plus, our government makes it so that we can't compete with them. There's more taxes on making the medicine than there is the medicine cost coming from there.
Oh. Well, I was going to say, because the ingredients, we've got to be able to get whatever the ingredients are here, and it sounds like the profit margin, geez Louise, pays you 50, costs you 50 cents to put something together, and you sell it for $1 zillion a month. There's like a huge profit margin. I can't believe that greed alone wouldn't take somebody out of their laziness and complacency to try to make money. So it must be the unfavorable taxes, then, and our own government getting.
Yep.
Why would our government want
to? You pay taxes in America. I mean, they say you got your income tax, which was supposed to be about 30%. Well, you figure, look at gasoline. It's 60 dollars a barrel. This is a good example of the taxes. So by the time it gets to the consumer, mind you, 55 gallons in a barrel. So it's a buck a gallon. So what is it? So by the time it gets to you in your car, it's gone up it's went fourfold.
Wow.
Went from $1 to $4.
Now,
$4.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was going to ask you, based on that, what you think. We don't usually get political. Well, we don't get political on my show, but this isn't my show. So I'd ask a question then, since it looks like we could be on the did we decide to not mess up the ecology in Alaska so we could take care of this ourselves? Because I'm going to assume that when it looks like we're going to be going to war with Syria, that'll be another reason for the gas to go up even more here, at least the reason the government will give.
We don't get oil from Syria, so that's the good news.
Do we get anything from there except grief?
No, they've been our enemy forever.
Yeah. The only thing I'm wondering about, you know, I'm torn now this time, because obviously the genocide and the using the, you know, the chemical weapons and stuff on their own people is a crappy thing. We went and got Saddam for that, trained him, and then they took all their training and used it against us. I think we could do it the same, but I guess one thing that's been bothering me since I joined Brain Injury Radio, and I've talked to so many veterans and so many actually gotten to interface, not in person, but, you know, with some intimacy in the interviews and here, I guess I look at this twice and go, geez, the Middle East has been the Middle East for much longer than we've existed. I'm not so sure we're going to be changing the way they do things over there. Maybe we should be coming home. I mean, we can't even control our own borders, and we're over trying to change a culture 50 times older than we are.
Well, they're trying to keep Syria, I think, from becoming more in bed with Iran and North Korea.
Yeah, but
you know,
Russia's pulling the puppet strings on Syria, so we screw with Syria, we're screwing with Russia again.
Yeah, again, Russia's not really a threat anymore. You know, it's China now.
Yeah, that's true. Whose side are they on in this? Are they going to stay neutral?
Who knows? Well, I would hope so. You know, they see, unfortunately, we're their biggest customer. We represent 40% of their economy.
Yeah, that must really kill them, deciding what's better, collecting all those IOUs we have out there are continuing to let us spin our wheels. They probably own quite a bit of us right now.
Well, what's scary is they're going to eventually want to collect.
Yeah, and where's the clock, the debt clock that you talk about?
Well, it's but yeah, so you got to Google world debt clock. I have it on one of the websites. I can't remember. I think it's on one of my People First sites. But yeah, it's pretty scary.
Hmm.
I want to say it's peoplefirstsv.com. You may have to browse through there somewhere.
Yeah, check that out, audience. Interesting stuff, that debt clock. Do you even have any close to recollect? Of course, you were talking about what they actually show on the number and the numbers behind it. That I was listening to a program you were doing one night where it wasn't quite as clear cut as what we see on the clock. You were talking about what was going on behind the scenes a little bit with that.
Well, all that we see is what you hear, that what the president is borrowed. And the reason you've heard that is because, and you know, he's not done, because you got to remember inflation and how all that works.
Mm-hmm.
Our president, it started in the 80s. So we borrowed money from the 80s on. And they kept it hidden for a good decade or so. And from the 90s on, you really see it going up. And so it's not just the last 10 years, it's the last
20 years it's been going on. And so they've been borrowing money, you know, which is interesting to run government. But what's even scarier is they're printing money out of thin air, because our money's not based on anything anymore. It's based on our economy.
Right.
You know,
exactly. We got rid of the gold standard.
Right. And so now we make money, and we're paying, like, the pharmaceuticals alone. We owe more in pharmaceuticals than our – we printed more fake money in pharmaceuticals than we borrowed to run government.
Oh, my God. So it's kind of like monopoly money, but that's kind of a house of cards kind of a –
well, what's
going
to happen is eventually that will catch up, and we will see that inflation. And if it does catch up, like I think it's going to, it will be so much worse than the depression. I mean, it'd be twice as bad, because it'll be there'd be less than 1% of 1% that'll be in position to control the world, because they have all the money.
Right. Well, yeah, that is really scary, especially if you've, you know, spent your life just like, you know, when you use the depression, you know, there's people, one of the reasons I think we'll be even in worse trouble. You know, my grandparents who grew up in the Depression era, they never had a credit card. And I'm not even so sure that they used a checkbook very often. I remember one of the things, the same grandpa, that when I'd spend the night over there, we would go, if I was there on that day once a month, and we would drive to the power company and the phone company, and he'd just walk in the front door to the front desk and pay his bill. If they didn't have the money to pay for it, they didn't have it. And somewhere in the generations after that, each one, I think, got a little worse in becoming an entitlement generation. And like you say, lazier, a little more lax, and just the expectation that this is the way it was always going to be, you know, that we came out of the recession and started climbing up on the graph. And they're, you know, especially these kids that are like 30, you know, in their early 30s now, they're a couple generations away from that. They have no idea. If they didn't have an iPhone or an iPad or a computer, I don't think they'd know how to exist in the world.
Yeah, it'd be tough. Yeah, we use our credit cards to get by sometimes.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I've tried really hard not to, and it's only because I grew up in a pretty strict, I had a lot of influence from those Depression grandparents that I had, and then of course my dad was a financial advisor, so I grew up with it around the dinner table, hearing you save a certain percent of every dime you bring in the house, and the motto was you pay yourself first. You know you're going to take your money and you're going to pay bills, but you consider yourself one of the bills and you pay yourself first. And, you know, whatever that percentage is for you, you religiously do it every dime you bring in the house. And, you know, that starts adding up as savings, and you simply don't buy things you can't afford. And so when I got a credit card, I thought it was weird. I had to get a credit card in order to build credit, because if you are a person who did it the old-fashioned way and you paid cash and you didn't buy stuff on credit, then you'd get a crappy credit score. You know, when you want to go out and borrow money for a house or something like that, so you're forced to get a credit card and use it to show that you'll use it and you'll pay for it. And that's somehow how they figure you'll, I don't know how people ever bought houses, you know, back in the old days when, you know, I guess they probably just checked to see if the people had a job. But I thought it was really, it just seemed odd to me. I didn't even have a brain injury back then, that I had to get some credit cards and use them just so I'd have a really good credit score. I thought that seems like some oxymoron kind of weird thing, but okay. So I pretty much don't use my credit cards unless I've got the money to pay for it. And then I use the credit card, and when the bill comes, I pay it off. So I'm not Citibank's favorite girl, that's for sure. Or Wells Fargo, I think that's our big two now. I'm sure they don't like me. They keep sending me things. You know, they want to give me money. Yeah. And give me all kinds of deals. But I feel very fortunate that I was brought up that way, which isn't to say that, I mean, I was an only child. I had a feeling of entitlement about me too. I don't think I could go out and rub two sticks together and make a fire if we wind up not having heaters in the house or if the power grid gets hit. So, you know, I don't think I'm a survivalist by any means. I probably wouldn't be. But I wonder if Frank ever got that. That was another thing, Craig, when I was talking to you the other night about Frank and his many pursuits and how I admired all the different things he's been trying but worried about if people
I think I'm
going
to die here in a minute, just so you know.
Okay. Well, call an
my
ambulance
smartphone.
First. Oh, you mean your phone.
No, my
okay.
phone's going to die, not me.
Oh, your phone's dying. Okay.
Yeah, no. I've been fighting with it. They use so much. I haven't been charged all day, so they use so much juice.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's no problem. We're not going to go on forever. But anyway, Frank had gotten that, what's that e-food called? It's the stuff that it stays fresh for like 500 years or something. and it must be kind of like the rations the military used to have, except that guy, I stepped in for him one night and he had a guest on that sold this e-foods is what it's called.
Great.
And, yeah, he was really good, and he said that all these meals are nutritious, so somehow maybe they found a way to
they were organic.
Yeah, that's it. They were organic, all organic, and they found a way to tweak these C-rations so that they were like real food. But I wonder, you know, people are funny. He gave a link to get some free samples, and we got ours, like, what, 3 months ago? I figured there was no rush in trying it since they're good for like 300 years. So I haven't tried it yet to see, you know, if it's any good yet, if the powder blows up into an organic pork chop or something. But I wonder if Frank tried his. I asked him once because he got his weeks before me and he hadn't tried it yet either. I thought, geez, we all got the free sample, but it's probably not a bad idea. You know, back in, again, in my grandma's day, and I don't know if any of you guys had relatives, older relatives who had been through the Depression, but my Nana had what she called a cold
my
room.
My mother and father were.
Downstairs in the basement where she would put canned goods and, you know, food that would be there, I guess. They'd plan on having a couple weeks worth of food down in this cold room in the basement. So whenever she'd go to the store, she'd buy, a couple cans of tuna or whatever it is you buy and put in the cold room. But I remember when I was little, you know, opening that up and seeing all the food, you know, that they had packed away. And, you know, like now we think about if one of the power grids went out, that's kind of the end. You know, you can't go to the store, you can't use your computer, you can't do any of that. That was probably a really good habit they had back in the day of stockpiling food. When we had a tornado here, and it was 5 years ago, right when we moved into our house, we're used to tornadoes around here, but we had something that was the first time in our history that it had happened, and it was this straight line storm. And what was really scary about it is a tornado is pretty compact to where it's located. So, like, you've got a city like ours, and if a tornado touches down, it's going to really trash where it touched down. But it usually doesn't make a path, like, up and down every street of the city. It's pretty localized damage. this straight line storm. I tell you, it was so scary driving around the city after. I thought of people who were in war-torn countries, and I cried. I mean, every inch of the city had downed trees going through rooftops, wires down everywhere. The whole city didn't have power, and it was freakish, this straight line storm. But when the insurance adjuster came out, he said, we're going through all the different things, and mostly we were blessed, we just had big tree branches come down that if they would have gone through the roof, we would have been in trouble. But the insurance adjuster is walking around everywhere. Finally, he gets in the kitchen and he said, what about perishable food items? And I just kind of looked at him with this blank look. And Gary just kind of looked at me and started laughing. And I said, well, I don't think we're going to need to put a claim in for that. Like, you know, in that white cold box, we have beverages and condiments. And that's about it. And he said, wow, it's so refreshing to find someone honest. Everyone in this neighborhood lost a side of beef in this storm. You know, it's like everybody pumped up how much food they had in the house and they made a big collection. And I said, well, you know, I think I had some root beer popsicles that were a couple years old in there, but I think we can probably cover that. But that's why I was really, when, you know, knowing what's going on with the economy and hearing that guest of Frank's, I thought it would be a really good idea to try that stuff and get one of those emergency kits. But, you know, if it really hits the fan like you talk about, I'm not sure, you know, what good 2 weeks worth is going to do for anybody. But
we'll especially see. In a city of a million people, you guys will be eating each other.
Wow. I wonder if it's better to move to a rural area at this time. Don't want to be handy pickings.
If it hits the fan, I'm heading up. I'm going to head up to the Yukon, head up that way with my kids. You know, because you can't survive in our country. We've just depleted everything.
Yeah, I think that would be the good idea. I just wonder, you know, if you'd be able to get gas, you know, be able to get out. Might be a long walk.
No, I'd be able to get out. We'll be walking away, you know, after at a certain point.
Wow. Boy, and I don't know where we'd go.
Life will
in the middle of Nebraska.
Have you seen what I've been typing? My mother's parents, they lost 260 acres of farm that had a couple of hundred cows, and my grandfather was a farmer and sold milk and everything. And one day trucks start pulling up, and they said, Mr. Lesher, that was their name, Lesher, and we've confiscated all of your property, and you're moving out today. And they just forced them out, the whole family. My mother was a young girl at the time, and they just claimed it and said, you've got to find a place to stay. They were homeless.
Without giving them any warning,
nothing.
And did that?
They weren't given anything.
Oh,
they
my
were
God.
They were poor dirt in the winter and nearly starved to death.
And how long ago was that?
That
yeah.
was like 1930s when the Great Depression
yeah, they
could happened.
Do that. Yeah, they can't do that. Well, they can. There's a due process.
Well, you know, they say they can't, but who knows what would happen if it really happened. Well, our deficit is such an enormous monster that we, as humans, can't comprehend it. It's like a giant universe fixing to collide with ours if we don't get it straightened out somehow.
And it's going to take, you got to figure each household owes $1 million on the money.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Yeah,
that would be really hard. It's going to be really hard to untangle that web, that's for sure. But I think we got to stop doing what we're doing and increasing it. That would be a really good start, you know, and then start chipping away at it if we're given the opportunity to do so. But to have the same behavior we have a saying someplace else that the definition of insanity is doing the same behavior expecting different results. And that's pretty much, you know, what would be going on if we are still handling the economy the same way. It ain't going to get better. It's going to get worse.
That's true.
So, anyway.
We people with disabilities, with brain injuries, have got to take our part. We've got to say, okay, we can't take this anymore as being treated as a 49th class person or 1,000th class person. We've got to step up to the plate and say hard times are coming and be ready and prepared. I really believe if we all took that independence, we still have a little bit left in of it before they take it over. I believe we can make a huge difference.
Yeah, I think
well,
so too.
And yeah, people in that situation, it's going to be very even more difficult. So I think that is a good message to put out there that, you know, even if you did store food enough for a couple days, I don't know, there's a couple of TV series on now. They must be getting close. It seems like you find TV series and then real things happen. But, you know, when it happens that quick, as it did with your grandparents, it might, you know, maybe we have due process on our homes, but if we don't have food in them, you know, you're not going to be able to get into the store. If the power's off, there'll be those that break the glass and loot and all that. But, I mean, the cash registers aren't going to work. Even in that straight-line storm, it was a trip because we went to the Super Target. None of the regular stores were even open. The Super Target did have their doors open somehow that people could go in, but every perishable in the store was toast. You know, it was all gone and rotten, and they had like crime scene tape up, you know, all the aisles. All the aisles you couldn't go down, you know. You were only able to buy boxed goods and so forth. And I kind of got a creepy feeling about that because there wasn't a lot of selection. You know, people came and got what they could, and the perishables were already all gone. Nobody got any of those. They melted overnight. This thing happened like in the evening and was going on overnight. So a lot of the stores weren't open for days and days and days. And so the couple you'd find that were overnight, the perishables all went bad, and everybody heard one place was open, you know, and went there, and that was pretty scary. So, yeah, it's good, probably a good reminder for everybody, and we won't dwell maybe any longer on this particular topic. But, you know, even if it's a bad winter storm, you know, a lot of us have talked about freaky weather in our area. We have had the freakiest weather in our area for the last year. I remember sitting here the first weekend of May, and it was 30 degrees, and we were expecting 2 to 4 inches of snow overnight. And our last snow is usually in March. Very seldom, you know, we might get a dusting in April, and the next day it's warm enough that it's gone. But, you know, for the most part, it's done in March. And here I was the first week of May, we're calling 2 to 4 inches. And we had 2 years ago that terrible flooding where everything that had been around the river was underwater. I mean, things, landmarks that had been there my whole life were underwater. They even had a thing called Freedom Park down by the river where there was an old battleship that they retired there in a submarine. Those things were floating in the water. They had been permanently, you know, mounted in the ground. It was like a park you could pay and go and see what the inside of the submarine and what the inside of the battleship looked like. They broke loose from the pressure in the water and were actually floating out there in these horrible floods. And then summer, we got it like, I'd have to say that at this time, and we're almost on the eve of fall, I'm glad, because I really hate winter and summer. I pray that we have a long fall, but, you know, this week it's been in the 90s, and one other time about a month ago, we had a week in the 90s that really felt like that hot, we have high humidity here, really hot, hot, humid weather, but 2 weeks out of a whole summer and snow in May and this weird flooding, and that's just here. I know places all over the country, and Les Paul, you were talking about your area, and it, so everybody is having these weird weather patterns. So, you know, whether it's something about the doomsday economy, or, you know, which has a lot of validity, or it's just a natural disaster, you know, due to weather conditions. You know, there was a lot of people on those days where it was really hot. I don't know what happened. It's not like they don't expect hot, humid weather in Nebraska, but part of the power went out in part of the city. Some transformer blew, and they claimed it was the heat. I thought, really? Hasn't it been hot in Nebraska forever? But funny things people come up with. But it's a good idea to be prepared.
I just typed something I wanted to tell you that says, did you know some scientists are saying that they can now take control of the weather and use it in warfare?
Isn't it?
There are several articles about it. And in my area, as an example, we've had more rain in the past 6 months than I have seen in probably the past 4 years, maybe five or six. I mean, we had a phenomenal, unbelievable amount of rain. It's finally stopped, and it's gone back to what seems like normal. We had the coolest summer that I can remember. We had some days it was in the 70s in the midday, and that's in the south. And normally it's 95 and sometimes 103, and you just don't know. A few years ago, we broke world records, not world records, our local weather records.
Yeah,
and now it's just the opposite. We broke a record low just recently.
It's pretty strange, and I think weather manipulation and, you know, finally, I've made, not made him, but Craig has asked questions over my pay grade a couple times in the last couple days when Gary happened to be sitting next to me, and I was mean, only because Craig gets me with that dang video camera thing. I decided to pay him back. I just hand the phone to Gary and say, it's Craig, and I don't tell Craig, and so Gary goes, hello, and then Craig's like, probably thinking, because he's in the middle of having a conversation with me, and all of a sudden Gary's...
Well, you'd know the instant messenger thing. He's actually not in the same type of technology as what we're doing.
No, but weather, he does do. He told you that the other day. He makes the software for weather, and he claims that weather manipulation isn't the case, and maybe at his level where he's training, you know, writing the software and that to train the military weather people. Maybe it's just if he told me the truth, he'd have to kill me or something. That would be a drag. I keep trying to get him to let
information.
Well, I watched a movie. They had a movie training these guys about weather, and I was like, man, I grew up in a sales culture, and this was a government culture, and I'm watching this film going, Jesus, is there any way I could do that? Yeah, I want to get in the middle of that. This guy had a really monotone voice, and I thought, nothing more exciting than having to listen to boring videos, but to have a voice with no inflection in it, you know?
Yeah.
I said, you ought to get some, not me, but, you know, you ought to get some sweet little weather girl in a yellow slicker with an umbrella, you know, who looks like a little Morton Salt girl. I said, those soldiers will be sitting up straight in their chair listening to that weather video, by golly, but I'm not sure this guy's going to do it. So, I don't know. Maybe they were sleeping through the weather manipulation part. I don't know. But anyway, it's an interesting thought, and being prepared is a good thought. weather, economy, all kinds of things that can affect it. You know, another thing, I got a friend that place that I go on Friday nights, he's going to be having, they botched a surgery on his foot, and the pin, the hardware in his pin came loose, and it's coming out his heel.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's got to go back in to have this surgery done over again, and he's scared. You know, we're all scared after you've been cut on a few times, and I mean, I feel lucky that I went down and didn't even know it until it was over with. If I had to look forward to it, I don't know how, I honestly don't know how I'd be able to deal with that emotionally. So we might send a prayer up for Peter because he's going to be having an icky Monday, and he's a real nice fella. He's the one I told you guys that sounds like Ray Romano. He's usually in very good spirits. And last night he wasn't in such good spirits. He's scared, and this pin is, you know, he's trying to gauze it and tape his foot together so the pin doesn't come all the way out. But he's going to have to go through the surgery. Now, you know, look at the case of here and our audience. You know, you get in an accident. Maybe it's not an accident that's bad enough to be, you know, or maybe you are in the hospital a long time, but you come home and the pantry's bare, you know, and you've spent all the money shopping. It's just preparedness. The show really wasn't about prepare, but it is kind of funny. The show was called Goulash, which I took to mean a little of this, a little of that. So we talked about music and plasticity and the economy and preparedness. And so I guess we have had a goulash kind of show.
Good goulash.
And the metronome. I think I'm going to take a picture of my metronome and post it. Although there might be some other family members wondering where that went. Maybe I should keep it under wraps. Kim got the metronome. Oh, my God, no. There wasn't a big dowry left there, so I felt very lucky that I got the metronome because, like I said, it was fond memories back in the day. But so what was it you were doing all day, Les Paul?
I'm glad you asked because I wanted to tell about that. I'm looking at it right now. If you type www.flightdeckrestaurant.net, flightdeckrestaurant.net, you'll see a picture of this really cool restaurant that our support group decided that, you know, you always hear that people are shut in, they can't get out, they can't do this. Well, we got three big vehicles. One was a van. We got my car, which is a Ford Edge, had five people in it. I had a wheelchair. I had a rollator, which is something someone walks with, and in the back of my Ford Edge, and it was just filled to the max, and we were all smiling, having a good time. We left around 3 o'clock today and didn't get back until 9 something tonight.
I'm sorry, I got a bad link, so I must have typed something wrong.
See if I
typed,
can post it in there.
Flightdeckrestaurant.net.
Yes, you'll see a picture of King Kong with an airplane in his hand in there. If you see it, let me see. I'll post
what happened it. To what's her name.
Hold on, here goes right now. You got it there in the screen
good.
Now.
Who is King Kong's muse? What was her name? He was
I can't say
her
name for some reason. I know who she was, but it's not coming to me.
What's her name, Craig? Did you run out of gas yet?
No, it's still going. I got
well, can you think of King Kong's girlfriend, what her name was?
Why can't I think of her name? It's just not coming to me. Well, we decided... All these people that are so fed up that they don't get to go out. They don't get to go out in the community. They don't get to socialize outside of their own homes all the time. I said, okay, I'll get my car. We'll get this van, and we got a guy's truck. I mean, that truck, car, van, whatever it was. I can't even remember. And we loaded it down, had it front to back loaded down. It was nothing but survivors and in charge of everything. And we drove about 65, 70 miles to this place from North Augusta to Leesville. Isn't it Leesville, South Carolina? I'm forgetting where it actually was. It tells on here. All I know is I set my GPS
Lexington.
For it and drove to
Lexington,
I'm
South
sorry.
Carolina?
I would say Leesville. Sorry?
No, Lexington, South Carolina.
Yeah, Lexington, South Carolina. And we went off the beaten path on purpose. We didn't go the major highways. We went on what was called US 1. And we saw all kinds of old places that you don't get to see, and farms and all kinds of things. And I mean, it took us about an hour and a half to drive down there. All three vehicles, we stayed together. We had a blast at the place. We had arranged where they'd hold a room just for us. And we were in there a good couple of hours. And I saw people that rarely get out of their home smiling so much I thought they were going to cry. One lady had tears in her eyes. And she said, oh, dear God in heaven, I can't believe I'm actually out this far from my house. I haven't been this far away from my home in 30 years. And she's a brain injury survivor, and her disability makes it where she can't drive. And so we loaded up the vehicle. I put wheelchairs here, there, and canes everywhere, and walkers. And it was just a blast. I felt wonderful going there. I have to admit, I was getting tired towards the end. When I first got a call from you, I was actually leaving to come home from there.
Okay.
So when you first called me, I was actually leaving where I dropped everybody off where they live and coming back. But it was a blast, and they have airplanes all over the wall of World War II and all different vintage things and pictures everywhere. Good restaurant. The owner of the place came out and said, well, what brought you guys all the way here? Where'd you come from? I said, we came from North Augusta, South Carolina, in Aiken County. And he came up and personally shook all of our hands and said, well, wow, because a bunch of wheelchairs went rolling in, and some of us walked. And at least three of us had no visible disability, even though we're all brain injury survivors. And we just had a blast, and we watched the football game for South Carolina and Georgia today there, too. So we had a blast. It was really fun. And I recommend that everybody that has a support group go and do something like that. Challenge yourself to make a day in the life, like the song by John Lennon, that make the difference and say, I can overcome my obstacles to the best of my ability. I mean, I'm tired right now, but it's a good tired. I had a blast today.
That's so cool. And this is a really neat link. Flight,
it is.
F-L-I-G-H-T.
It's beautiful in there.
Yep, Flight Deck Restaurant. Very cool. Well, that is so neat. What a neat, that's kind of, what I was talking about like, even Spirit Wind Records, somebody facilitating getting a group together, and you help each other. That was really a neat thing for you to do, and I'm glad everyone had so fun.
And the cool thing is that there was no one except survivors involved. The survivors did the whole thing. All of us were brain injury survivors, and we didn't have anybody direct us. We didn't have anyone telling us we can do whatever. We reserved a room of our choice. They had about four or five different rooms you can reserve, and we decided to reserve that one. And I spent a lot of time walking around looking at the airplanes and jets and things they have all over the wall, and different big model airplanes that are huge. And it's a very cool place. It was worth the drive.
It looks cool. Had you been there before?
I've never been there before. They have been telling me about it for the past month, a couple of people in the support group, and I said, what's the flight deck? That sounds cool, because I love everything that flies. I love airplanes, rockets, anything that has wings or flies in the air. And so it piqued my interest when I heard about it, and then they said, will you drive? I'm going to drive for what? Where's this at? I've never been there. I had faith in my GPS, and I had faith in this guy that I don't know very well, but he's new to our support group, and he said, I will make sure we all get there. And we were like a caravan. We stayed behind one another, and just if someone got out of form, we held up and waited for them to get back, and then we went right along. It took longer than it should have because we made sure that we were all taking care of one. It was awesome. It was really great.
That
I mean,
is so cool.
A group
How
of
many
survivors.
People did you say
there were,
about?
I'm trying to remember. I think it was 8 of us in all. A couple couldn't go that were planning on going because of health problems.
Hmm.
And that was one thing. We were planning on about 10 going. We were trying to rent a 15-passenger van, and the guy that had the company thinking they were going to do it, something happened and they couldn't do it. So that's why we decided to just take all our vehicles. But it was totally survivor done. Nobody except the survivors did it. That's what made it an awesome day today.
That
we,
is very
the survivors,
cool.
can be the super survivors. We really can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got the chance, huh?
That's right.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. Well, then I would have to, I keep doing these segues tonight. I wonder if he'll die. Can't you plug yourself in, Craig? We only got 20 minutes left. But
my phone uses more juice than
it charges.
You
charges when you're on.
And
well, the thing with my new phone, the only thing I don't like about it is it seems like the battery's dead before the show's over.
Yeah, no,
it was
my battery doesn't last long on the iPhone.
It says it's a 8 to 10 hour battery, but I don't believe that's true.
But
no, I think they lie.
It.
Right, when you're talking on it, or like I send a lot of pictures or texts, it is disappointing. The iPhone
doesn't
last all day.
I took a bunch of pictures with my phone today. I hope I can send them to everybody and just show some of what we did.
Awesome. You ought to post them on your page, but you can forward them. You know, forward message them. Well, I can tell you how to after, but I'll bet this was, okay, so this is a segue then for both of you in your service work attempts. And I'm going to be corny here because this is the guy, you know, when I tried to get all the guys and gals to show up for our big party, surprise party we had a few weeks back. I forgot about the different time and all that. And, you know, I divined the idea 24 hours ahead. So I really planned it and then ran like a monster trying to get it done. But he wound up writing me 2 days later. And he said he was so sorry. If he would have gotten the message, he would have come. And but he didn't. And I wrote back. I said, it's okay. I plugged you anyway. I think you're great. And he wrote back to me, "You're my star," which is the name of this song by Rescue, who is in Milan, Italy. I find people in the darndest places.
Sometimes
Chat room, just so anyone out in the audience can hear. If you, kicked the dog antler. Did you know antlers are really good for dogs to chew on because they don't fray? But if you step on it, ouch, it hurts. For you guys out there, if you go to YouTube and you type three words in the search, rescue, spark out, it will take you to Rescue's video, Spark Out, but he actually has two videos on there, and one of them is the video to the song I just played, You're My Star, and the other one is to his other song, Spark Out, and they're both really cool videos in their own way, really different, too. The contrast and how he did the videos. Yeah, aren't they? That one, I'd really like to have people someday watch the Spark Out video and come on and tell what they think that means. Their interpretation of that Spark Out video. But this one, he's just playing piano, just him and the piano. And I just love it, especially with those new Bose headphones I have. Like when I get off of here, I'll probably listen with that. I love to turn it up real loud. You know, in the beginning when I first heard that song, I didn't think I liked it, but that refrain is so catchy, that where he's going through the days of the week.
Yeah,
it's just really sweet. But when he wrote me back, I was like a blushing schoolgirl when he wrote me back and he said, "You're my star," and put a happy face. I was like, oh, I love that song. That's so cool. And anyway, that was pretty neat.
Go ahead. That never happened that really made me sad, that when I went to the American Music Therapy Association, I can't even remember the name of what they called it on the final night. No, it was the second night, I believe. They were going to have people sing and perform and everything, and I had been asked since they found out I sing using my high-powered karaoke system. Now, it's not a little kitty karaoke system. It's close to $1,000. It's getting old, but it's more like a heavy-duty guitar amp, a big one. But
right.
I use that, and I practice, and I sing on it every once in a while. When I feel bad, I use it. But when I was there at the Music Therapy Association, they had this big thing where everybody was taking turns performing, and I was asked to sing as I was getting a horrible migraine. I'd had one starting on and off that day, and at the time they asked me to perform, I couldn't do it. I was nauseous at my stomach. I'm saying, darn, I wanted to do that so bad. Normally, I'm shy at things like that when you see something that big, because there are a lot of people there, hundreds.
Yeah.
Several hundred.
I'd be freaked out.
But I was saying, okay, I'm going to do it. I never got to do it. They came to check on me because they were wondering what happened to me, because they wanted me to be in it. I was laying in my bed mad at myself because my head was killing me. But I could barely even walk. It got so bad. And so I just had to surrender and say, well, this was just not the time.
I felt like that yesterday. I woke up that way with that really stiff neck that you can't turn your head because it feels like, you know, you've been in a car wreck or something. And even my teeth hurt, and my dent up on my upper left of my forehead just ached from from the dent to the jaw, and then my teeth actually hurt, and my neck was so stiff I couldn't move. I felt like crap yesterday, to be honest with you. I took like four Advils, and I don't know, stuff they give me never really seems to help, so I just take hands full of Advil. I don't know.
Except
I mean,
the migraines, the only thing that occasionally works for me. Other things don't work at all.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing they told my dad the other day, and I think I am the same, you take after your parents and different things, but he has some pretty high sensitivity. There's some drugs that they would try with him, and in fact, maybe they did try for a short period of time, but he seems to have a sensitivity to a lot of medications, and I seem to too. So I was taking a lot of them for a long time, and I think that turned my biology around or something. I don't know, but kind of weird.
Hey, you don't think something to do with the brain aneurysm did it?
Oh yeah, right. That sensory
just a little
thing.
Bit.
You know, I got a note from Dr. First of all, there were two. We had two neurosurgeons in our world. I'll mention this, and then we're winding down to the last few minutes, and I'll probably just play Ari Moore out, but. I was going to tell you that Dr. Kelly Orr, who was on with Marshall Waddell, I'm sorry, you can tell I'm getting a little tired, Wounded Home, Wounded Warrior, they co-wrote the book together, and Dr. Orr had been a neuropsychologist for many years, dealing strictly with military for the most part, and more the families of the soldiers than the soldiers themselves, because terrible trauma was going on with the family. When any one element changes, everyone changes. And so he had been a counselor in that environment for 30 years. And I heard him say that he had retired. And right when that happened, his wife had a brain aneurysm. And now he's a caregiver. And has been a caregiver, since 2001, so he's not new at it. And I think a person with his background, you know, being a neuropsychologist that was used to helping families, the tools he used, I think that's going to make a really interesting show, that now that he's a caregiver.
And I know he had to think, wow, look at the irony of what I'm doing and what I've done. That sounds like a great show.
Well, and the irony wasn't lost on me. That's why I got a hold of him, because I thought, here's a man. Of course, he has purpose helping his wife, but they had plans for retirement, and the plans have changed, and now he's a caregiver, and I thought, and retired, and I thought, what better way than him being able to share his journey with our audience, because with his academic background and all the veterans we have coming home and their families, and now him being a literal caretaker to his wife with a brain injury, that this would give him a sense of purpose. And he's real excited, and I did talk to him today, and so I'm going to train him. I'm going to try to train him Monday.
Cool.
I'll go in Monday, and then I'm hoping that he'll start as soon as possible. I don't remember for sure, that we had talked about him doing one of the Mondays, and so we have Kim on the first Monday of each month, so I think Dr. Orr would have a choice of a couple of the other Mondays if he was going to do a monthly show. But now it appears, we've got Tuesday open too, but we might want to fill the singles, people who are going to do one show a month on that earlier Monday platform. And then the other thing I didn't get a chance to read, and then I better play us out of here, but you remember Dr. David Nielsen that I had on the other night, a neurosurgeon who had a brain injury. He's very interested in coming and doing a show, and I think he might be in a week or two of this platform, so you guys won't have to hear me doing goulash on Saturday night. I think Dr. Nielsen might have an interest in that. I didn't get to read. He wrote me a long note, and I didn't have time to read it because when I texted Craig to see if he was playing a tape tonight, he saw that silliness that I wrote in the program notes last night. And I still don't know if you saw that, but I wrote silliness in the